So last time we looked at your first season of Dream Car Garage, which was 2000, the Baldwin Motion Camaro.
Yep.
And you guys spread that across 13 episodes. And you alluded to Dale Earnhardt inviting you guys down in that episode, but I want this to be a standalone podcast.
Right.
So you got to tell that story. So this is season two, and you guys go down to DEI and spread that across your whole season. Shoot there for like a week.
Right. So
yeah. So how did that happen?
We'll go back. So in season one, we were doing the Baldwin Motion Car, and as that season was wrapping up, well, it was wrapped up already.
Yep. It was already airing.
It was already airing. It had already finished the whole 13 episodes.
Okay.
And then Dale Earnhardt came up to Oshawa to the plant, to the GM plant, to do, I don't know, some sort of spiel.
But was it for the, because he was running Daytona with Junior, would it have been for the C5R for Corvette Racing?
So it would have been, yes.
2001.
So he'd already run the C5R. The Daytona 500 hadn't happened yet.
Okay, so he was up for some GM thing.
He was up for some GM thing.
Okay.
And he saw Tom, because Tom was a journalist for the Toronto Star in the wheel section.
And easily recognizable.
And Tom's very recognizable, absolutely. And larger than life. You wouldn't miss him. And so Earnhardt comes up to him and says, hey, really like your TV show. Junior and I are doing a 69 Camaro. Why don't you come down sometime? And Tom comes back and explains the whole thing, and I'm thinking he's full of shit, and he says call him, and there he is, and he invites us down. So this is now the beginning of season two, and we just got invited to the biggest
cup shop in the world,
and the biggest NASCAR
personality
in history, either Petty or him, one of the two. And at that point he was certainly relevant. Far more than Petty.
Right. He was still chasing champion.
He was
champion.
Still king.
Yeah.
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 So we get invited down, and we don't know what to expect.
So you guys didn't plan anything?
We didn't plan a thing. We didn't know what to do or, you know, what we were going to shoot or anything. We went down with Lestraco, Chris, our sound guy, and that was it. And Tom and myself not having a clue what we were going to do.
So let's play a little bit of that.
Okay.
This season, we spent a little time in North Carolina with a race car driver who turned out to be a real car guy, and we wanted to share that with you.
Well, Bill from Mooresville, North Carolina, sent us an email about his brand new, or new to him, 1957 Chevy. Well, we had an opportunity to visit Mooresville recently and got together with a guy who's got his own 57 Chevy. In fact, we can't almost stop him talking about it. Dale, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
We heard that you put a new cylinder head on this thing.
Well, I did.
So you guys show up and, like, is Dale Sr. kind of dictating, hey, let's shoot my 57 Chevy, let's...
No, so we go into this showroom here and it's got, you know, black granite floors and the whole bit, and it's the Taj Mahal.
Right.
So we just look at what's in the showroom, and then we're going to work off of what's in there.
Right.
Right. At this point, we don't know if we're getting to go into the back shop or anything yet.
Okay.
So the first car is, you know, the coral pink 57 Chevy. And what was interesting is when we're getting set up in the showroom, we haven't met Dale yet.
Yep.
And what happens is there's this screwdriver under the hood of that Chevy.
Of this pink one.
Of this pink one, kind of sitting there. And you'll see later that he's tapping the screwdriver in his hand later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was just putting us in our place and grabs the screwdriver, whips it across the granite floor, and just, who the fuck left this here? And we're like, whoa. So...
What, he just wanted to make a little
I think bit of a scene? He was truly an intimidator, and I think he did it on the racetrack, and he did it with journalists and people he didn't know just to maybe, I don't know, I'm just surmising, but he sure had us on our heels instantly.
Right.
And then he asked us, he said, well, what are my lines? What do you want me to talk about? So he whips the screwdriver across the floor, and I think he's just... You know,
trying to set the tone?
Set the tone that he's in charge.
Yep.
And then he asks us, what are my lines? What do you want me to say?
Because he's used to, like a scripted deal or, you know, doesn't know how it works. And
so neither one of us know what the other wants or is expecting. And so we start off and say, just talk about the cars in here. The C5R, one of his Bush cars, the 57 Chevy. Just talk about the cars. You know, what do you like? What don't you like? And he was kind of, it was very different that we were not a polished crew. Mm. We were a couple of guys, a couple of hillbillies out of Canada that didn't have a clue really what we were wanting to do.
Right.
Had nothing pre-planned and just winged it.
Right.
And I think he found it fascinating, and it took a while for him to warm up to how we did things.
Right. Well, let's continue on with the opening here. So this is how you guys opened.
On this thing?
Yeah.
Well, I did. I bought this old car originally from Texas, and it's an original car. It's original paint, original interior, original engine, six-cylinder. I wanted to keep it all original. So we went to tuning on it, just, you know, brakes, a few little things just to fix up on it a little bit, and found out it had a cracked head on it. It had a little miss in it. I couldn't get it out. It had a cracked little bit of water coming in it. So we changed the head. I rebuilt the carburetor. We did a little bit of a valve job on the head we put on. We found a 56 Chevrolet head. It had 16,000 miles on the engine. And got a good head and put it on. Same, just put it back as original as possible. But I just tinkered with this car for the last couple months. Went through the rear end, made sure it was good, put wheel bearings in it. Did a new drive shaft. The drive shaft was warped in. It had a vibration, couldn't get it out, so changed it. So it's just a neat old car. I love to drive it. It's very relaxing to drive. Six-cylinder, not much power, but she cruises good down the highway.
I'll tell you, the first thing I noticed about it was all original, and it's nice to see that there's some guys left who want to leave them that way. I mean, you can spend $100,000 working on this car.
You can cut a car up. And talking about that, I do have a 57 Chevrolet I'm spending a lot of money on. I'm putting it on a chassis that's got Corvette suspension on it, putting a great engine in it, six-speed transmission. So we have got cars like that, but this is a unique car. It's all original, not been cut on or worked on or tore up. It's a neat car, automatic. It's a fun car to drive, enjoyable to ride around in. My 12-year-old daughter loves riding around in this car. Body paint, the paint's original, the interior's original. So I paid probably a little more, but it's a solid car, no rust, nothing under the car is wrong. I've been all over the car, so it's a very presentable car, a good car to restore to its original luster, but I enjoy it as it is just driving it stock. And you know, the paint's a little worn on it. She's showing through in some places. But this old coral pink was a great color back in those days.
Yeah, of all the years I've been watching you race, I never thought I'd ever see you owning a pink car. Did they ever make you drive a pink IROC car?
I drove a pink race car the first year I started racing. So the first car I ever drove was a pink car. And I'm not going back to this because of that, but this is just a neat old car because it was original paint. And this was a great color back in 1957, the old coral pink. Yeah. It really wasn't called pink, it was called coral.
Well, then it made it more manly for a guy. After all, you are the intimidator, you can't go around in a pretty pink car.
But you're talking about money, you know, of course, anything. You could spend a lot of money just putting a different engine in this thing, souping up, paint job, tearing it apart, putting it back together. I know guys that's got well over $30,000 in restoration jobs, and they're getting it. You know, they're trading cars and selling.
Who's Bill? What was that deal?
That was just, we'd get people sending in questions.
Okay.
So this Bill guy had sent in a question about 57 Chevy. And so that's how this came about. We had that question, and then that guy was out of Mooresville.
Right.
So we're kind of answering the question or letting Dale answer.
Was the shop question in Mooresville?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Huh. And did you guys really know what kind of a car guy Senior was?
Didn't really have a clue.
Yeah.
And again, until we got there.
Well, I guess other than that, he was already restoring a 69 Camaro.
Correct.
With no idea to what level he was restoring it.
What extent. And Steve Crisp, who was kind of our liaison.
Yeah, his right-hand guy,
which
really.
Was Dale's right-hand guy. He was a huge car guy and funny as hell. He was another guy that was just hilarious. Mm. He was the one telling us, and he helped Senior buy a bunch of the cars.
Okay.
And looked for cars for him and stuff, and helped Junior with the cars. He was really the gearhead, and I don't know if he got them into it, but he certainly helped transact most of their deals for him.
Right. Did you guys did you think you were just, well, I guess you didn't really know. I was going to say, do you think that you were just going to get to go through the whole cup shop and look at everything and film that?
We ended up going through the engine shop, the dyno shop, you know, where they were setting up the cars. Steve took us around pretty much everywhere, and we had an understanding with Steve that we would send him all the footage, and if there was anything they didn't want seen,
right,
we wouldn't air it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the atmosphere was cool because
they were
really
relaxed that, you know, if we caught something on camera they didn't want, they would just say, don't air that. And it did happen, actually, in the end.
Right, okay. Yeah. So they did catch some stuff.
Trading cars and selling cars all the time. 57 Chevrolet hardtops is going for way up in the 30s and 40s.
Bill's got a good project to start on here. He doesn't have to spend big money, though. He can kind of nickel and dime his way through it.
He can, and I did that. I've done that with this car. Everything on this car is original, but I've tuned on it. I've did shocks. I've did brakes. New battery box frame, and you can go buy aftermarket things. The radio's original looking radio, but it's an AM FM. Looks stock. But I have the old one that came out and had it rebuilt and had it fixed. So it still plays, but I wanted an FM radio in it, but it looks stock. So you can tinker with these cars, tune on them, change this, change that. I got a set of mag wheels on it, a different set of tires, try to make it ride a little smoother, but I still have the old stock pink wheels.
You're just like a car guy, just like the rest of us. Thanks for spending a little time with Dream Car Garage.
Peter and Tom wanted to know what my dream car was. Well, this is it. It's Corvette Racer. And the reason why is I've talked about running the 24-hour race for a lot of years in Daytona. And Chevrolet and the Corvette guys came up with this deal last year, really, but we couldn't put it together because of my neck injuries.
What was your impression of his enthusiasm for sports car racing and endurance racing? Because that was really, his first go, and he did it with Junior.
Yeah. I think twofold. One, he really enjoyed sports car racing.
Right.
I think he really got along great with Ron Fellows, and Fellows was involved in that whole
Fellows C5R. And I forget the whole team, but he was in the other car.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I think he helped him with, you know, turning right as well.
And Fellows also being a serious, you know, road course ringer in NASCAR at the time. So
absolutely.
Junior or Senior had some respect for him.
100%.
Right.
And I think that they really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was, one, it was something new. You got to remember he was, I don't know, early 50s here.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he's coming to the end of his NASCAR career.
Yep.
And I think he really enjoyed the road racing and the endurance racing, and he got to do it with Junior and got to do it with other really good road racers, so he was learning a bunch, too, from those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I think the car works so much better. And I'm just surmising, I don't know for sure, but I don't think he really ever ran anything other than stock cars.
Right. So it'd be like, it'd be a real treat to drive a car like that.
Oh, it'd be like, wow, this is a great car.
Compared to a stock car.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you see videos of whatever, 2000. Well, you know, this is 2001, so 99, 2000. Cars aren't working good around Sonoma and Watkins
they're
Glen.
They're rolling over and they're flopping around and, you know, and really, they didn't have very many road races.
Right, just two.
So probably, a guy like Fellows could come in and you know, really put on a show.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So this is the car you guys made him pick, a dream car, modern dream car?
Right, and out of all the cars, he said, this is the one I really like, and he did.
So, being a true race car driver.
Yeah, it's a race car.
Did you tell him that your first race car had the number 3 on it?
No, I didn't. I left that to Tom.
Yeah.
Tom would tell him a bunch of things.
I went down and tested the car, and I've got a Corvette that I drive around the street, but it's nothing as fancy.
Car looks good on the track.
Get up and go, and also stop and turn as good as this race car does. And this is going to be a fun car to race in the 24-hour race, but a fun car and a great memory for me. Matter of fact, might even build a street car just like this to play with on the street. But this is, I think, an ultimate dream car right here. Now, you're talking about serious brakes. this baby's got serious brakes on it. It uses an AP brake caliper, but it uses a big steel disc rotor just like a factory car's got on it, so it's a little bit larger. Now, this thing will stop. Unlike a Winston Cup car, we use a little bit smaller brakes on it. We've got good brakes, but not as much as this car has. And you talk about motor. This car has got serious motor in it. It's around 625 horsepower, which, you know, a Winston Cup engine and a race engine's got around 720 to 740, a lot more than that. But you're talking about a serious restricted race motor. This engine is a little bit restricted. It's a 427 cubic inch conversion engine, but we have to run a restrictor on it because of the class we run it in the Daytona 24 hours. But you're talking about torque. Now, this thing has got a lot of low-end torque. Used to Winston Cup cars, we're torquing up around 8,000 and shifting at 8,600. Maybe we revved to 9,000 at different times. But this thing, you're shifting at 6,200. Your max RPM's at 6,500. So you got a lot of low-end torque. 3,000 RPMs up, that thing is a bear. So you got to be really careful on fresh tires or right out of the pits on fresh tires or a cold racetrack. Got to be really careful. Get those tires heated up and get going before you really stand on this baby. Stand on this baby too much too soon, you'll be around and around and in the infield. A lot of torque on this hood. You're talking about a beautiful car. This is a beautiful car. But all this beauty translates into downforce. She's got tremendous downforce with the spoiler package on it and the front air dam and everything, the way it's built, the car is just tremendous on sticking to the racetrack. This car running 140, 50 mile an hour, you can absolutely jam on the brakes and it will not slide the tires because it has so much downforce. Tremendous downforce. Really, it runs good through the air, good downforce, good speed, good cornering capabilities because of the aerodynamics package. It looks great too. To look this good.
Guys collect these now.
Big dollar cars.
What do you think it's worth now?
$1 million, easy.
Not a bad investment.
No. Hmm. And you could still have to pay the $250.
Right. Yeah. Like you'd have a lot of fun driving that thing around the track.
It'd be a great car.
Yeah.
7 years ago, when I first got bit by the race bug, I started out with a '66 Shelby Hertz car.
So this is what everyone knows as the Deerhead Shop.
Yeah.
What is the Deerhead Shop?
The Deerhead Shop was their first shop, really, and it was the Busch shop.
Okay.
That they were doing the Busch cars out of. And obviously Dale was a huge hunter.
Right.
And you can see the walls just, you know, littered with deer heads and you know, he just loved the hunting. So that's trying to think what segment we were doing here. Just play it through.
Yeah.
Then an A production Corvette, and last year I did my first Trans Am race. But you know what my ultimate dream car is for a race car? Is this number 8 Bud Winston Cup car, Junior's car.
Why don't you
tell me a little about this thing, Dale?
Well, the block is a steel block, just like we have in my 69 Camaro, aluminum intake, all the same kind of stuff you'll see under the hood of that car. We tweak it a little bit to get that 700 horsepower out of it, and makes a lot of power.
What about the rear ends and the trannies?
Well, the rear end.
Yeah, so you almost got to ask, like, Junior what the story is on the Deerhead shop. Like, so it was their Busch shop, and they just used it kind of as a showroom, or they were still running out of there?
I think they were still running Busch stuff, but I'm not sure exactly what they were doing with that.
Right, because Junior would have been running before this, because this is one of his early cup seasons, call it.
Right.
He would have been running Busch for DEI.
Yeah.
Right. That's a iconic shop.
Yep.
Rear end's actually a Ford 9-inch rear end. With NASCAR rules, everybody has to run the same thing. The transmission's a T10. So it's all...
So what was it like? You said, okay, now we're going to do a segment, or someone suggested we do a segment on the Budweiser car, on Junior's car. And you said, okay, that's a cool car.
Right.
Current cup car. And then Steve or Senior said, introduced you to Junior and said, here, you do the segment with him?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So Steve Crisp kind of was, you know, looked after Junior, especially in the early days.
Right.
And that, and just made sure that he was new to Cup and new to the... All the media stuff. Just made sure that, you know, he was coming across the way he should.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So he was going to tell you about his Cup car.
Yeah.
Transmission is a T10. So it's all... standard stuff that's been in Chevrolets and Fords over the past 50 years. It's all just been beefed up for the 500 miles we run.
And what's one of these things weigh?
About 3,400 pounds without the driver.
3,700 pounds with Tom stuffed in the trunk. Now, these Monte Carlos, they're pretty slick. They're real aerodynamic. Tell us about it.
We spend a lot of time in the wind tunnel trying to tweak each corner of the car to get the air to go around the car the fastest. Also trying to get air on the spoiler and the nose of the car to get the most downforce.
Now, I've seen you tear the whole side off one of these cars. How does that affect it?
Well, one time at Daytona, we had a C-post collapse, and that cost 4/10 a lap, so that's how big aero is.
What's the single most important thing to make these things fly?
Well, I think the most important thing is whose name you got on the roof.
Good answer. I'm not ready to have my name on the roof, but what do I got to do to jump in this car?
Well, I do need a trunk rubber in my 69 Camaro.
Done.
All right. If you're going to do this, though, you got to be cool. Stay on the compound because we don't want to get in any trouble.
Anything I need to know?
Well, it's just like a stock Monte Carlo. They do call them stock cars, dude.
There's some of Junior's guys doing a pit stop.
So you got to drive his, like, a show car or something?
Yeah, it wasn't the full-on race car, obviously, that they're going to race that weekend.
Yep.
But it was one of their show cars, and they had, I don't know, like a 500-horsepower motor in it or whatever. But it still had a Jericho or whatever they were on, NT101s or whatever it was back then.
Transmission, yeah.
Yeah, and we'd like to have fun with it. And this was when Steve Crisp was a really funny guy. And we all talked about, you know, how to make it more interesting than just driving around the parking lot.
Right.
And that's when Crisp came up with the idea. He says, well, let's pretend you go off the, and we did. We went across the road and that.
Right, because Junior said stay on the compound.
Right, stay on the compound. He says, let's pretend you abandon that idea and just go on the road, and the cops are going to pull you over. And, of course, all the cops in Mooresville, you know, knew Earnhardt's.
Of course, yeah.
So Steve calls him up and says, hey, we need you for a few minutes to do a little segment. And then we just kind of came up with this idea to do this segment. And it just morphed into, you know, driving the car and getting arrested and the whole bit.
Right. Because yeah. They're practicing. Well, we'll play it here. That's good.
You know what? I think they're going to hang a Huey and try and get some new skins for this.
Did these guys know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I guess, yeah.
Junior says you can put a fresh set of Goodyears on this.
I think we're going to put you in a truck with Tom. We're trying to practice here. You need to keep moving.
You know, the interior of these are pretty clean. All you get is a steering wheel, a seat, a shifter, and a couple of gauges. Where's the air conditioning? Power windows. You got a clutch on it. You don't pop it and spin the wheels. You're just going to stall the thing. Just look at this. Drive up to a stop sign. There's not even a turn signal on this thing. I think I'm going to get in trouble on the road with this thing. You know what's great about these cars? They've got a little club that gets together every Sunday afternoon, and they actually rent the track and go around the track. And you know what? They're getting 80 to 120,000 people watching them every Sunday. You imagine that?
Who came up with those lines? That's pretty good. You know, there's a little club they have every weekend. Everyone takes these cars out.
We were taking it as we weren't into stock car racing.
Right.
You know, so we're just, the whole thing was just a goof.
Yeah.
I think these cars are really going to go up in value with that sort of enthusiasm for them when they're brand new. What are they going to be like when they're 20 years old? Well, I'm going to take this thing out on the open road and see what she really does.
Please, <Jason. laughs> You got their dash cam footage.
Oh, yeah, we had the dash cam on. These guys were awesome.
Good afternoon, sir. How you doing?
Good. How about you?
Fine. Do you know why I stopped you?
I figured you heard we were sponsored by Country Style Donuts. Thought maybe we had some in the trunk.
No, sir. The reason I stopped you is because in North Carolina, when you drive a race car on the roads, you must first have a safety net up. You must be wearing a helmet. And third of all, I don't see your spotter anywhere around. Have you got your driver license registration in hand?
No, sir, I don't.
Okay, if you would, how about step out of the vehicle for me?
All right. I don't know how they call these things stock cars. They don't even have doors.
Sir, if you would just put your hands on the hood right here, please.
You know what?
It's a good shot.
For a race car, I can't believe how nice the paint is on this thing.
Sir, this is what happens when you pass the pace car.
Hey, you're Dennis Gage.
I'm not Dennis Gage. I'm Peter Klute from Dream Car Garage.
You're not Peter from Dream Car Garage. I watched that show.
Watch your head, Mr. Gage.
What show was Dennis Gage? So
Dennis Gage is the guy with the mustache.
Right.
He's been
was it My Classic Car?
My Classic Car. Yeah. So he was the big guy at the time, and we were in season two. So right. We were kind of the new guys on the block on Speed or Speed Vision at the time.
Yep.
So we just had fun with the whole thing. And the guys, the cops were awesome.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah. Steve was great. Earnhardt's were like awesome. They let us do kind of
just goofing around at the race shop.
At the race shop. And that's why we all just were pretty relaxed about it. And I think that first day that we were there, I think we were there for 3 days.
Mm.
The first day just broke the ice. And that one segment where after Tom gets Senior to do that one segment with the 57 Chevy, and just out of the blue, he says to Earnhardt, now that I got you on tape, you can kiss my ass.
Well, he can kiss my ass now because I got it on tape.
I think Earnhardt just thought, wow, these are normal guys. Like
they don't care.
They don't care.
Yeah. Because I'm sure he would have been, like, the majority of his interactions at that point, people would have been tiptoeing around. He's the intimidator, kissing his ass, and, you know, Tom's telling him to kiss his ass.
So, and then Earnhardt called him Nacho instead of Nacho.
Right.
He says, Nacho, you're okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
You know, for a new car, the thing really gets up and goes. Some of the interior options, well, that leaves a little bit to desire. But to replace this car, I mean, to rebuild it from scratch, going to cost you at least $200,000.
Well, that's a wrap on another episode of Dream Car Garage.
Oh, for sure.
Well, I want to tell you how warm and rich the North Carolina hospitality has been since we've been here.
So you guys had an Ask the Pro segment where you did work on just any car, like a little tip?
Yeah, it was just basically a pro tip on what to do with, installing a trunk rubber like this one for Junior.
Right. So he said it in, I guess he said it in the other clip. Did he actually need a trunk rubber?
He did.
Okay.
They were putting a trunk rubber in.
So he was working on this.
That was the car that he and Senior were working on the season before.
So this is the 69 Camaro.
This is the 69 Camaro.
Okay. So restored to original.
More of a resto mod.
More of a resto mod.
Had a cool motor in it and everything.
Yep. Okay. And so Junior had you do the trunk rubber.
Right. And Junior had a great sense of humor, too.
Right.
He's just ripping on me here, too.
Junior's trunk thing leaks like a sieve, but they all do. And it looks like he's got one wicked system in this thing. And if it gets wet, he's probably going to blow about 10 grand. So what you got to do first is rip out the old trunk rubber. That's pretty easy to do. The next thing you need to do is vacuum out all the old dirt. Once you're finishing the vacuum, you got to degrease that whole area.
Man, what's taking so long here?
You here to help or to eat?
Man, a deal's a deal. Get to work.
Make sure that all of this stuff here is really clean, because if you're going to put the weather strip adhesive on and it's dirty, it just isn't going to stick.
Man, I tell you what, ask for a trunk rubber, not a whole restoration.
You know, I think we're going to have to vacuum this thing again.
Dude, we're going to Mooresville, not going to Pebble Beach.
What's that?
I said we're going to Mooresville, not Pebble Beach.
Well, I can see why it leaked last time, huh? That's why we're taking our time, huh? All right, next thing we got to do is put some weather strip adhesive on both surfaces. So we got to start with the car and then the weather strip. All right, now I really do need your help. You know, normally after you let this set up, it's ready to go in. Normally we'd take the trunk lid off this thing, but Junior here is in a rush.
Yeah, that's the right way to do it. We got somewhere to go.
All right, let's go.
All right, once you get the rest of the trunk rubber in place, the last thing you gotta do is slice it.
Yeah, we got some engineers if you need some help.
I know you're in a rush, but we gotta wipe up that axle.
Oh, most definitely.
You know, can't have a mess there. All right, man, deal's a deal.
I'm pretty impressed, man, good job. You ready to go ride?
Absolutely, let's go. What's this thing here?
That's a little TV monitor for GPS.
No kidding, huh?
Yeah.
You get lost often?
No, not really, but we take long trips.
You get lost often. So this was obviously part of the segment you guys talked about, that you were going to go for a drive.
Go for a drive afterwards, yeah.
And what was, I guess, how old was Junior? Probably in his early 20s at that time? Maybe something like that?
Yeah.
What was your impression of him compared to Senior? Like, totally a different guy.
Senior had a really good sense of humor, too. Mm. But I think he was just way more reserved. Junior was, like, he knew he was going to be the king of the world soon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was winning races. Like, he was the guy.
Right.
And had a great sense of humor. He was young and just fun. I think he was enjoying life.
Right.
Having a good time with everything.
Cruising around in a 69 Camaro here.
Yeah.
And wheeling around like.
Driving it pretty good.
Yeah. Right.
What'd you do to the motor in this thing?
Well, we just, I had it worked on by a buddy of mine. It's a standard, it's like a aluminum head Corvette motor, and puts out a lot of power. I mean, the transmission and the 373 gear really helped it a lot. We put a nice little package underneath for handlings. I love the transmission, just like a race car. High performance.
Now, what else did you do to this thing here? You got suspension done? What'd you do there?
Well, we just put all new bushings in it, put some bigger sway bars in it to get some of the roll out of the car. Put some new release springs from the, probably 80s model Z28.
And, you guys listening to tunes in there?
It's starting to handle a little bit better. It's got the low-profile tires on it. Took a little bit away from the handle of the car, so we kind of helped it out with some of the sway bars and whatnot.
Now, what about the changing the motor? I know when I did my first Shelby, it was a numbers match piece. And I caught a whole ton of grief for pulling the original motor out, caging it, and doing all that stuff. You getting that too?
Well, you can't do this with an original loader. I mean, I wanted a car that would haul butt. And I have some, I enjoyed the car for a while when it had original numbers. And I kept all that stuff, and I can always put it back, but I'm 26 years old. I want to go fast at where
there
I go.
There you go, 26. So what was your impression of the shop compared to, I guess, what you thought it would be going to a race shop? Was like, did it meet your expectations? Was
way
it
beyond?
Okay.
I mean, the you think of stock car racing, and I had never been to a
cup big race.
Or a cup shop or any big race shop at that point. And going there was an eye-opener compared to restoration shops that I'd been to.
Which are kind of typically dirty.
Yeah, they're body shops.
Body shops, right, body shops.
So a race shop, I mean, the floors were epoxied or granite. And Earnhardt, the original showroom there was supposed to be one of the setup shops. There was still a surface plate in the middle of a granite floor, and the guys are going, you know, we can't work on granite floors type thing.
Really?
Yeah.
So he built the shop with a granite floor, and they were going to do setup on the granite floor.
Well, the surface plate was built into the floor.
Really?
Yeah.
So then they made that the showroom.
They made that the showroom. But everything was just spotlessly clean, and everything was brand new. You know, the equipment, the carts, the CNC, you know, centers, the dynos, where everything was brand new. It was spectacular. The building was spectacular. I don't know, it was probably 100,000 feet or maybe more in different shops for different things. And I remember, I think they had three engine dynos in this, you know, climate-controlled environment. And they were telling us at the time for the restrictor plate motors.
Right, because they were the kings of restrictor plate racing.
King of restrictor plate racing at that point. That if they found 2 horsepower in the head, they would scrap all the old ones and everybody would go to the new head. And then it was that guy's, you know, job to find another 2 horsepower. You know, they had drive shaft dynos, which we couldn't put on the show.
Right.
You know, we'd shot it. They were testing everything. They were leaving nothing to chance. It was sort of primitive technology, but taking to an extreme.
Right.
Compared to, like, if you take supercars of the time, I mean, obviously they weren't fuel injected. They were just 4-speed gearboxes, you know, a 9-inch that's been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
But they were making the stuff unbelievably good. And obviously the last, like, you heard Senior talk about the RPM they were running back then. That was 20 years ago. They were running 9,000 RPM.
Yeah.
For 3 hours, four right. hours, 500 miles.
Yeah. Hmm. How much did, like, really seeing that operation open your eyes? Because you had just started your season of Trans Am racing, sports car racing. How much did seeing that operation open your eyes to, like, how serious guys take racing and how much effort can be put behind racing? Did you really appreciate how much effort was put behind cup racing, at least?
I didn't until after I'd been there.
Right.
Yep. Right. And, I mean, those guys were on the top of their game
mm-hmm.
at that point. But they were, it was way more than I ever expected.
Right.
Yep.
Now, I know, because at the same time, or the year after, you were building this shop that we're in right now.
Right.
How much did DEI influence your build of this shop?
A lot. In the sense of, you know, having compartmentalized the shop. So, you know, we have the assembly side, we have the mechanical side, we have the body shop, we have the, you know, the fab shop, the race shop, the cleanup shop, and then the metal shop. So, and that's what they did. They had, everything had, you know, a separate sort of room or area to work in.
Right.
And I think that was a big part of it. And then just everything had to be epoxied. The floors were all epoxied here. You know, put good lighting in, you know, painted all the walls and tried to make a restoration shop that looked more like a race shop
mm.
than a traditional restoration shop.
Right, with just a poured floor and, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, most shops back then had a concrete floor and, you know, the concrete block walls or whatever was there, and that was it. Nobody was doing epoxy floors in a body shop at that point.
Right. Right. How was, I guess, you guys were there for 3 days and you kind of hung out on and off with, well, Junior and Senior, really.
Mm-hmm.
How was it kind of left with Senior?
So in that Deerhead shop that we did that one segment out of, that the last night we were there, Senior was locking up and he lived behind the place or, you know, close by.
Mm-hmm.
And he was locking the doors of this compound. And we were in the Deerhead shop packing up our stuff. And it was 9 at night or whatever. And Lestraco was big into hunting. He was doing hunting shows at the time, the cameraman.
Oh, so they must have been talking.
So they were talking about the hunting and the Deerhead shop. And, you know, he's hand us all a beer and we're just drinking beers and just shooting the shit. And after we left that night, he liked the fact that we weren't scripted, we weren't polished, we were just...
Right, he knew you guys didn't have an angle on him.
There was no angle.
Right.
We thought it was cool, we liked cars, he liked cars, we liked racing. He obviously is the king of racing.
Yeah.
And we weren't... Like, neither one of us, Tom or myself or Lestraco or Chris, the camera guy, or the sound guy, none of us were really into stock car racing at all.
Right. So it must have almost been refreshing compared to, like, super fans.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, We didn't know who all the guys were or what the teams were or anything. We were, you know, we were car guys doing car TV, not racers. We both, Tom and I, had raced a little bit.
Right.
But it was just purely for fun.
Right.
You know?
Right. So, yeah, he got this whole, he got to express himself completely as a car guy as opposed to a racer.
Correct. Yeah.
A big difference there.
Right. And most interviews would want to talk to him about
season.
You know, the season or the car or, you know, the crash last weekend or who took out who or, you know, the drama of NASCAR.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't. We barely touched on stock cars other than that, you know, making fun of it.
Yeah.
Which they must have thought, these guys are idiots. Like,
yeah,
we have this little event every weekend, you know, and 100,000 people show up. Imagine that. So we were just goofing on the whole thing.
Huh. Yeah. So talking to Lastracco and, like, you guys have a pretty cool sit-down interview of Senior where he's just completely candid talking about life.
Yeah. Tom had just finished shooting a segment with him, and they were in front of that 57 Chevy. And the cameras were still rolling. Tom still had his mic on, and Senior still had his mic on. And I was just by a ladder, and Lastracco just had the camera rolling on the tripod.
Mm-hmm.
And they start talking, and we're just shooting the shit. And then he just loosens right up, and he starts talking about him learning to drive, doing his first race with that pink car, you know, how that came about, you know, his father putting him on his lap to teaching him how to drive. And then he goes on about talking about bringing kids up properly, teaching them right. And then, you know, it went from, you know, teaching them how to drive a car to teaching them to learn, you know, teaching them to go to church on Sundays and teaching them about guns and just everything to do with how your kids should be brought up, which was kind of him very much unplugged.
Right.
And then he talks about his daughter turning 12, and he bought her a car for her birth year, and her having a dream that night before she knew she was even getting the car, and telling Teresa, the, you know, Senior's wife and the daughter's mom, you know, I had a dream that I was getting a car, and she was, and she got the car that night.
Wow.
So it's just kind of ironic. And then when we finished that, I don't know, it was 10 or 15 minutes with him just shooting shit.
Yeah.
Steve Crisp came up to us and said, you just got an interview with him that nobody's ever gotten. And before we, well, as we were driving home, he called us up and said, I want to have you guys host a shop tour.
Okay.
So what he wanted us to do was, you know, for their merchandise machine.
Yep.
Do, you know, Dream Car Garage guys tour of DEI. And as us making fun of it, having
so a, it would have been a time, goofy shop tour.
It would have been a goofy shop tour.
Yeah.
And I forget what the number was, but he told us, and he says, you know, says, is 75 grand enough to do it? And we're like, well, yeah, it's more than enough to do it.
Yeah.
And we would have done it for free because it was great. And I mean, it helped, having Earnhardt on there on her second season just helped launch us, you know, to a different world again, just because he was king.
Right. So your show must have had a huge amount of viewership anyways, just because of the car culture in the Carolinas, in the Southeast.
For sure. But having Earnhardt on and kind of spreading it out over the whole season, so he was on a fair bit,
right,
was great for us.
Right.
Yeah.
So after that, Steve says, hey, you guys got an interview with Earnhardt that no one's ever got, and you just don't really think anything of it, I assume?
Right, because we haven't edited any of this yet.
Right.
So all we have is raw footage now.
Yep.
And before we get home, Senior asked us if we would do this shop tour.
Yeah.
Which we're like, for sure.
You guys haven't edited anything 2 weeks after you get the news that he died.
Right. We were watching the race because now we had an interest. We weren't.
Right. You knew the guys.
We weren't NASCAR fans, and we're literally watching the race going, holy cow, they're going to finish like, you know, first, second, and wherever senior finishes, because it was Junior and Waltrip.
Right.
And, you know, and we're, you know.
Cheering for your buddies.
Cheering now for the guys that we just got to meet. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the day, he's gone.
Yep. Huh. What was that like? I mean, the next time you guys got together to film and talked about it.
So.
Or.
It wasn't long afterward because we did have to get some of the shows out.
Yeah.
So I talked to Steve Crisp and called Steve up maybe a week after he died and said to Steve, you know, what do you want us to do with this?
Right.
And he was a little snarky at first. He says, you know, do whatever you want with it. Big E signed off on it. And I said, no, like, tell us what you want us to do because we don't make our living, you know, doing TV. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wouldn't want
to disrespect
yep. anything. You guys were just awesome. So we went through the footage and he said, this one's good, this one's good, this one's good. And then we had that interview that, you know, was kind of relevant now or.
Oh, it would have been huge for people huge. To see.
So I said to Steve, what do you want us to do with that? And he says, put it in the can until one of us says it's good to go. Just leave it there. And right. we did. Mm. So we never put that footage out there. So we only put out what they approved. And we got invited back. Teresa invited us back. And then we did stuff with Waltrip and Junior. And who was the other guy then? Steve Parks? Park? I forget who it was that took the Pennzoil car. So
after he passed away, you guys got invited back by Teresa and shot some more.
The next year.
And shot some more stuff.
Yeah, with Waltrip.
Right.
And just kind of, I believe we had Teresa on that year. And it was obviously really different.
Yeah.
Yep. But, and Steve Crisp then ended up going to,
Hendrix?
Well, not yet. He did end up at Hendrix, but he went, so Junior broke off kind of and did the Busch thing himself. He had a Busch team as well as then driving for DEI.
Yep.
So Steve kind of went with Junior.
Right.
And then when Junior went to Hendrix, Steve went with him to Hendrix as well.
Right. Yeah. Huh. So did you guys, and maybe it's tough to say, but did you guys envision kind of this long relationship doing stuff every year with Earnhardt or doing bits in here and there? And you know,
I would have liked to have thought that would have went on. And yep. we ended up doing, we ended up having a great relationship with Hendrick because Junior went there and we kind of got that introduction through Steve Crisp.
Okay.
We got an introduction to the NASCAR world.
Right. Through the right guy.
Through the right guy, and we didn't do anything stupid. Like we had some really cool footage that would have been interesting, especially at the time when all the, you know, the bullshit of autopsy photos and all the like stupidity of, you know,
the media, yeah,
that just went haywire there. We just put it in the can and said, we'll leave it there,
right. Huh. Well, that's probably a good spot to end it. Maybe we'll look at season 3.
Yeah.
Find some cool stuff for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Now, at this time, were you guys a lot more comfortable on camera, or you at least, by the time you went down to Earnhardt's shop?
A little bit. What was interesting is when somebody like Junior was goofing on me, it was easy to kind of goof back a little bit.
Right.
And I think it just, and then we're doing stupid stuff like that skit, driving the car and the cops coming. It just became easier.
Right. But when it's not as serious, it's easier, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. You know, you're not trying to, oh, what are the numbers of this thing and how many of these were built? And, you know, and people would, you know, if you said there was 350 built and there was 349, people would email you in. You got it wrong.
Yeah. Right. So when you're goofing and having fun, then it's easier.
It made it easier. Yeah.
That's good. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Anytime.